from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news. Broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Lots to talk about tonight, in particular the Madeleine McCann case. Thought I'd bring on criminal profiler Pat Brown. She has lots of experience with this case, do you not, Pat? Hello, Pat.
I did write a book on the case called Profile of Disappearance of Madeleine McCann, and I also went over to Prairie du Luge, and I did investigate there and do reconstructions myself. So, yeah, I'm kind of familiar. And if anybody can's also had their solicitors, Carter Ruck.
You know, Pat, we're having phone trouble again, so I am going to, we'll drop the line and I'm going to call you right back, okay?
All right. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry about that, folks. That happens sometimes in live radio. We're going to take a break and we'll be back in just a minute. Okay, we're back. I apologize about the telephone issues. Pat Brown is here, a criminal profiler, and we're going to talk about the updates in the Madeleine McCann case. Pat, your history in this case is in-depth. Share that with the audience.
Well, I have been involved in this case for many years. Did a lot of blogging, and then I wrote a book on the case called Profile of the Disappearance of Madeleine McCann. And then I went to Prairie du Luge with the money I earned from that book, before the McCanns had their solicitors threaten Amazon and pull it off the market. But I did go to Prairie du Luge and do...
Yeah. Can you hear me, Pat? I'm sorry. It looks like we've lost Pat again. It's just one of those things. I am going to disconnect, and we're going to take a break. What happened with Madeleine McCann is... been lots of press reports about an arrest. There's been lots of press reports about suspects. There's been suspect descriptions sent out. Now it looks like one of the key sightings has been ruled out. And gosh darn it, it looks like Pat Brown's telephone has been abducted itself tonight because it just does not want to seem to work. So we're going to try this one more time. We're going to take one more break, and then we'll come back. And again, I apologize for those of you in the radio. You can't see how red my face is right now. But for those of you on television watching later, can. So we're going to try this one more time. We'll be right back. All right. We're going to try this one more time, Pat. I hope your cell phone hasn't been abducted tonight. No, we shouldn't make light of this. Anyway, lots of press on the Madeleine McCann sighting. I'm just looking at a recent update just in the last little bit here saying one of the key sightings has been ruled out. Let's go with your thoughts on what's been going on in the last few days.
Well, can I say a massive farce? I mean, that's the best thing I can use to describe this. And I've been suspicious of this entire Scotland Yard review for the last number of years. I was like, what are they reviewing? What's costing so much? Why haven't they come up with anything? And now, after all this time, they've come up with this brilliant reconstruction and this fantastic new information, eliminating one suspect and focusing on another. And this is what they've come up with. I knew within about 30 minutes of reading the case files many years ago, so where the hell were they? Let me go to what was happening tonight on Crime Watch. I did get to see it. Did you get to see Crime Watch tonight?
No, I didn't, no.
Well, what can I say except what a fabrication. They were touting this as the most... a new reconstruction, of the crime that's really going to show what happened. And all I could see that it was a reconstruction leaving out tremendous amounts of important details. So it was revisionist history, things that they just didn't bother to bring up anymore because now they were coming up with a new scenario. Here's what I think they're doing. They have a suspect... which they said had been focused on for 6 years to the exclusion of anything else. And this was a man that Jane Tanner supposedly saw going from the McCann's apartment with a little girl in her arms. I mean, in his arms.
Right.
She said she had left the dinner table to go check on her kids. She walked down the street. She passed Jerry McCann talking outside the flat. He was talking with his friend Jerry, his tennis partner, and she walked by them, and then as she was going to turn the corner, she saw this man walking by with the little girl. And then she eventually, after Madeline went missing, told the McCanns about this, and this became supposedly the number one suspect. Now, that is correct. In the very beginning, when everybody believed the McCann's story, and the police believed Jane Tanner was telling the truth, before things didn't make sense, and before the evidence came out that their stories were conflicting and the evidence didn't support an abduction. That's what they originally were looking at. Then they began to believe that Jane Tanner was full of it, that she had made up this story about this man because her description kept changing of him.
Right.
And also, which is very interesting, at the time she said she walked by Jerry and his friend Jeremy on the street, they said they didn't see her. And I've been on that street. I walked on that street, and you cannot walk by anybody on that street and not have them see you. It's a very narrow street. It's very quiet at night, and you would hear somebody going clunk, clunk, clunk up the street. Impossible for them not to see her. Nor did they see this man that she saw. So the whole thing was so sketchy. And so what happened was, as the police began to believe that this was bull, they began to focus on another sighting. This is the Portuguese police. They began to focus on the 10 o'clock sighting of a man walking toward the beach with a little girl, and this man was seen by an entire family who had left one of the establishments there. And the head of the family, Mr. Smith, later said it looked like Jerry McCann to him,
right,
the man carrying the little girl. Well, that was their focus for the last 6 years almost. The Portuguese police was that man, and they believed it was Jerry McCann. And the McCanns never wanted to talk about that particular sighting by the Smiths. They were only talking about Jane. Jane saw the guy. They completely blew off the Smith sighting. So now we have this revisionist history. We have the Scotland Yard folk saying, oh, the Portuguese police were focused on only focused on Jane's sighting and never looked at the Smith sighting, which is total garbage. It was the exact opposite. And now what they're saying is that they have discounted Jane's sighting. However, they aren't saying it's because she's full of it and made that crap up to give the McCann's a kidnapper. They're saying she mistook a possible kidnapper for a man who was vacationing there, and he was taking his little girl home, his little child home from the babysitting place.
Right.
Really? 6 years later, suddenly this guy appears out of nowhere. Oh, and by the way, they showed the clothes he was wearing that night. Really, the guy now knows what clothes he was wearing that night 6 years ago? Exactly. I mean, that story is bogus. And so now they're saying we know who that is. So consequently, he wasn't the kidnapper, just a tourist with his own child. So now we're going to look at the Smith sighting. You know, as the one that Portugal never looked at, supposedly.
Right.
We're going to look at the Smith sighting, and they made up these new, what they call EFIDs.
Right.
And some people say it looks like Jerry, but I don't think it's as looking like Jerry as people say it does. And now they're saying, not that it's Jerry, but some other guy. And of course, I think what they're trying to do is allow Jane Tanner to not have be a liar,
right,
not allow her to be a liar for the McCanns, and to move now the abduction, quote, to a later time, so that therefore there really would have been an abductor at 10 o'clock, and it wouldn't really be Jerry carrying his child, this dead child, off toward the beach to hide her. So I think this is the whole thing, and it sounds fantastical to a lot of people who have not been paying attention to this case and read all the police files. So they go, oh, well, that's just conspiracy theory crap, and Scotland Yard knows what they're doing.
Right.
But that thing that they showed tonight was just unbelievable revisionist history.
I'm looking at the sketches and seeing if it compares to McCann, and it, yeah, I agree with you, it doesn't. But why now? Why? And I'm sure you're going to answer, damned if I know, but why now?
Why now? Well, I would say it's because one reason is because the trial is going on in Portugal, which a lot of people don't even realize. This is the libel trial the McCandless sued Detective Amaral for his book that he put out, Truth of a Lie. And they've already done their part. That's, you know, they've already had the process, their side of it. And now Amaral is defending himself this week and next week. And lo and behold, who knows about it right now, because all of this is going on. Now they've got new suspects, and we have a whole new theory. And oh, and here's the thing that's really important. The McCanns have been exonerated. Now, right from the beginning, Scotland Yard said they weren't going to look at the McCanns because they were innocent, essentially. They've been cleared, which they have not been cleared by Portugal. But they said they've been cleared. But yet they said they were going to go back and look. Well, Redwood said this recently. We went back and looked at the case from the very beginning, and we did not presume anything. Really? Then how come you aren't looking at the McCanns, and how come you aren't looking at their friends? How come that is all being ignored? How come the evidence of the dogs, you know, hitting in their apartment for cadaver and blood, how come that's being ignored? Why is everything being ignored except for anything that has nothing to do with the McCanns possibly being involved? So what they've done with this reconstruction and their new whole timeline and everything,
right,
is they've said Jane Tanner isn't lying for the McCanns, and the abductor did abduct the child later, and that was him on the street. The guy you thought was Jerry was not. It was the abductor. Oh, now the McCanns are innocent. And hence, Detective Amaral really is a big bum, because he libeled the heck out of them, and so did the whole Portuguese police force.
Okay, all right. Pat Brown's here, criminal profiler.
So you're going to say it's a conspiracy theory. But, I mean, these are the facts. I mean, if anybody goes back and reads the files and look what's really going on, it's the most convoluted thing I've ever seen. And there are people out there who say, well, how could you even suspect that a police force like Scotland Yard would be involved in a whitewash? And I haven't got an answer for that, because it boggles my mind. I don't have a real good answer. I don't know. But I can see the evidence in front of me and know what they're telling is not the truth.
Yeah, Pat, just before I let you go, and again, I apologize for the phone issues tonight.
Okay.
When we had you on before, we were talking about Amazon and your book and all that sort of stuff. What had them so angry with you? What angle were you going down that they didn't like?
The same angle that Detective Amaral went down. I mean, my book was basically, I examined the police files, and with the police files, I looked at all the possibilities and how anything could have gone down, and I came up with the same basic conclusions as Amaral. I have a few differences in certain areas where I think maybe it happened this way, and maybe it happened that way, because all the evidence isn't totally clear. But I did this. I come up with the same thing he did. And after I went to Portugal and did some further studies, those supported what I believed even more. But the McCanns, especially Jerry McCann, who said under oath that he did not have a problem with anybody purporting the theory, obviously has enough problems with people purporting a theory to sue them,
yeah,
and to threaten them with lawsuit.
Yeah.
And they are very successful at doing so with many, many people. So they do not want any theory out there but the one that Madeline was abducted. And they don't allow for other opinions on that, in spite of the fact the evidence points in quite in fact away from abduction. There's not one shred of evidence pointing toward abduction.
Well, we all hope that there'll be answers to this case eventually, but it looks like...
I don't think so.
Yeah, you don't think so?
I think we're seeing a whitewash. I think what we're going to find, this is my belief, this supposed guy that is now the cleared suspect, the Jane Tanner sighting,
right,
we're probably never going to find out anything about this guy. I mean, he's a guy. This is what they're telling us. I mean, the police department is telling us there's a guy that said such and such.
Right.
I think we're going to eventually find out that there's another guy that they have determined is the fellow that the Smith saw, and he'll either be a guy who's eliminated, who will never find out who he is, or he will be some creepy dead predator that they can pin the crime on. I don't know which way it's going to go, but my guess is we're never going to have anything but the Scotland Yard's version of what happened, and we're never going to have evidence to support their version, but very few people will question it then, because, hey, Scotland Yard said it was true, so even if they don't show us any proof of that, we must believe them.
Wow. Well, we'll stay tuned. Pat Brown, criminal profiler, thank you. We're going to have you back on. I'm sure we'll talk about this more. Thanks again.
Okay, Dana.
Okay, bye-bye. Right. That's criminal profiler Pat Brown, who's had her own investigative experience with this case. and, you know, what's true, what isn't true. You heard Pat. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with former Los Angeles District Attorney, Los Angeles County District Attorney, Robin Sachs, to get her thoughts on the McCann case. And Conrad Murray. Yeah, apparently he's getting out of jail. We'll see what Robin has to say about that. This is the Dana Presser Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. My favorite former Los Angeles County Assistant District Attorney, actually I only know one, is here, Robin Sachs. How you been, stranger?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
You've been away for a bit, but it's always great to have you on the show. Listen, lots to talk about tonight. I won't keep you too long, though, but first thing, your thoughts on apparently Conrad Murray's getting out of jail soon.
Well, my immediate thought is he's probably one of the few people in the state of California, specifically within the county of Los Angeles, that actually has served their full sentence, and probably even more to his chagrin after we heard Valerie Wallace's attorney gasp at the AEG Jackson family verdict just a couple weeks ago.
Now, you're right. When it comes down to it, he served his time, but God, doesn't it just seem like yesterday, this whole thing?
You know, it's interesting. In some ways, yes, in some ways, no. The case has a lot of personal significance for me. I mean, in many ways, the Jackson saga and Jackson cases have been like the never-ending cases, the cases that never stop, because in a lot of ways, you know, the sexual abuse cases of the 90s came full circle as we heard about them in the civil trial just now. And so from my seat, it seemed like the trial that never ended.
Robin Sachs is here. She's a legal analyst on all your TV stations, and she's a former ADA, an author, talk radio host. She does a little bit of everything, but most of all, she's a friend of this program. Let's talk about AEG a little bit and that lawsuit, the billion-dollar lawsuit or whatever it was. Did you ever think it was going to go anywhere?
You know, I didn't. As a matter of fact, Tom Mesro and I run into each other often, and he and I ran into him right as they were picking a jury in Century City while he was walking to his office, and I had just actually seen him on the air pontificating about the case, and he was like, this is a slam dunk case. They're going to totally win this case. And I was like, I don't think so. And, you know, Jews on the west side of Los Angeles are fond of a phrase called, or a Yiddish word called a chazer. And that's what Katherine Jackson, the Jackson family, is/are as a collective whole. And if you don't think about the chazer effect, the fact that the regular jurors think that these people are pigs trying to get more and more and more and more and more out of Jackson, it was like... this, you know, the elephant in the room that was never discussed or dealt with. The fact of the matter is that juries right now are very sensitive to our economic times. I mean, the verdicts are lower in cases than they've ever been. Those million, billion-dollar punitive lawsuits, they're just not being handed down. I mean, look at the Toyota civil case just a couple weeks ago. They came back in favor of Toyota. I mean, litigants are viewed as litigious hogs, pigs, hawsers, who are trying to get more when it's not necessarily what they deserve. And so what's happening is there's this change in the courthouse. There's a view that the person who rushes to court first is really the bad person, more like the defendant almost. A little bit of a different philosophy and culture than what it had been previously.
What did this case do for media and how these types of cases are reported? Celebrity, the doctor shopping, the Arnie Klein, the Conrad Murray, all that sort of stuff. Did it change anything, or is there going to be another one someday soon?
Well, I mean, I think that there's, you know, I thought it was a huge win for the DA's office when they got the criminal conviction in this case.
Right.
And the reason why it was such a huge win is because people have this general belief that people's drug problems are their own drug problems, and you kind of can't blame the pushers for the drug users and abusers. And every law in California and many laws throughout the country are designed with treatment and rehabilitation and not punishment in mind. So there's this philosophy that, you know, Conrad Murray was kind of the last dude standing. But what made the criminal case so different than the civil case is that the DA's office answered all the obvious and then answered all the unobvious questions. They took the no stone goes unturned approach. They were going to answer every question. They were not going to drink their own Kool-Aid. They were not going to assume that it was going to be a slam dunk. And despite the fact that it was 5 months of a civil trial, I think what the Jackson civil lawyers did was they really focused on the hiring. Did AEG hire Conrad Murray? But they forgot. They just kind of assumed that the criminal conviction on liability was going to be enough and never really proved that Conrad Murray deviated from normal standards. I mean, I think that if they spent half the amount of time the DA did talking about how he was given CPR on a bed, maybe they would have been able to show that he was negligent.
Yeah, that's for sure. Robin Sachs is here, and I'm not laughing at the fact that somebody lost their lives, but that CPR in the bed thing still makes me scratch my head. But Madeleine McCann, all over the news the last couple of days. I just had Pat Brown on. Pat's had her own issues with the family and reporting the case. In fact, they tried to come after her. She thinks it's just a big farce, this whole suspect sighting. What about you? 6 years later, all of a sudden, we're getting all this information with what you went through with John Carr.
John Mark Carr.
And is this another type of situation like that?
Well, you know, I honestly, I haven't been up on exactly what's developed today. I do know that I was a headline reader today. I have to admit that I was at Disneyland. So
you.
When you're in the happiest place on earth, you're not thinking about Madeleine McCann, unfortunately. But I will tell you that when I saw the headlines, even though I think that that whole family was bizarre, and even though I think that there's a lot of stuff that's kind of interesting, and I actually did read Pat Brown's tweet talking about, you know, DNA and DNA matches and so forth, I do think that there's one bit of silver lining here, whether it's a real sighting or a false sighting or whatever. The fact that there's something that can bring a cold case to a warm status is a critical crossroads that
Absolutely.
We're at and critical for those of us who care about justice. So when you're sitting here, and I think, you know, there was that other case that just over the weekend, there was an arrest in New York of this cold case Baby Hope that was found, you know, a 1970s murder that they actually had someone confess to, and he was indicted and charged and arraigned over the weekend. So I think that, you know, the one thing that this just reminds us is, you know, it should remind the perpetrators that they're never safe and that justice can always come. And it should remind victims and victims' families that closure is always possible.
And publicity on a case, cold, like you say, bringing something cold, bringing it warm is always a good thing, whether this comes to anything or not. But let's talk about Carr for a second. You know, there are lots of them out there that are going to come forward that are going to try and claim responsibility for things. How do you deal with that, first of all, as a DA, and how do you deal with that as a reporter?
Well, I mean, I think there's two angles to it. I mean, first of all, with John Mark Carr, I'm still not convinced that he had nothing to do with JonBenet Ramsey or any, you know, and I certainly know that there's enough that he's done other things that would warrant criminal prosecution.
Right.
I'm from either side, I think that the number one thing, and this is constantly the, you know, what you and I talk about, both from a reporting point of view and from a legal point of view, that's the problem that we always have, and that is, you know, conclusion-based investigation. When and so often, you know, lawyers, journalists, whomever, will do whatever it takes to create a set of facts or rather find the evidence that work within a specific set of facts or work within a specific conclusion. And I think that you have to truly, truly be open-minded, and that includes looking at all of the leads, talking to all the people, and saying, you know, does this make sense? Does it pass the PU test on every level? And I think that, you know, there's both the analytic investigative tools that we need to keep in mind, but I think that so often is our common sense tools that we need to keep in mind.
Robin Sachs is here. What have you been up to? I haven't heard you. It's like you've fallen off the face of the earth here lately.
You know, I've been a little bit quiet. I'm actually working for Al Jazeera America, which is doing amazing, amazing, amazing things. The you know, a lot of people get scared when they hear that it's worse, but really they should really take note on what amazing things Al Jazeera is doing. I'm working on a technology show called Techno,
And we're about to also launch a pop culture show and potentially a food show. And all of the stuff that we're doing is extremely high-level journalism, high-level reporting, beautiful, beautiful pieces. I'm doing funny part of the whole thing is I'm doing a lot of stuff behind the camera, including some legal work. And then I'm also doing I've been taking on a few little cases here and there, and then I'm also working for Talk Radio 790 in Los Angeles as well.
Always the busiest girl that I know. I've got about 4 minutes left with you, and I'm going to take up every minute that I can.
Got it.
And, yeah, people shouldn't let Al Jazeera scare them, because this is Al Jazeera America. It's a little bit different, but I'm curious about the technology show. What can we see there?
But, you know, so it's really interesting. It's kind of like technology meets innovation. I mean, it's really about cutting-edge technology changing people's lives. And the stories are like, I mean, for me, by the way, like, I'm the person who, you know, went to law school so I wouldn't have to do science and math, and that stuff kind of scares me. But, I mean, the things that are going on, you know, take popular science and discovery and, you know, Scientific America, put it all together. And you get and beautiful work. We did an amazing story on a woman who had a face transplant. Literally, one person's face peeled off of a cadaver and put onto another person after she was a victim of domestic violence and her face was completely burned and wouldn't have had a face. She has a face now, and it's a beautiful story on both sides because this family of the cadaver family or the deceased family, the donor family, can actually see their mother basically on somebody else. It was an unbelievable story, and children inventing things that NASA is picking up the technology. We're having an episode next week about bikes that are made out of bamboo, which is keeping a city in Georgia people working where they were having an economic recession of devastating results, where people weren't working and they were using their own technological advances to be able to keep people working. So while there's this technology aspect, there's also this human aspect of, you know, curing diseases, creating jobs, creating life for people, and their beautiful stories.
Did you get to ride the roller coaster today?
I did. Not only that, I did the Tower of Terror. I like jumped, and that's its own technology show.
There you go. Robin Sachs, it's always a pleasure, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Robin Sachs, former ADA from Los Angeles County. She's an author. Check out her webpage at robinsachs.com. She's done lots of analyst work as a legal analyst on all the networks. And now she's doing a lot of behind-the-camera work. And in fact, Al Jazeera America is a channel out there. Don't let the name scare you. That looks interesting. Yeah, bringing back John Mark Carr, we talked about him many times, Robin and I, over the years, and him claiming that he was responsible for the death of JonBenet Ramsey. In fact, I, in my time here, not that what I say means much, but he's one of the few people that I've ever not wanted to interview. I've spoken to him. Spoke to him on the phone for at length, and the guy creeped me out. Whether he was involved or not, I don't know. The McCann case is interesting. Pat Brown, one of the preeminent crime profilers in the United States and North America. And Pat goes and she looks at a case. She's usually right as far as what's going on. But Robin makes a real good point, too, bringing a cold case back and getting it warm again so people can look at it and see what really happened. Pat doesn't think there'll be an answer. Maybe there will, maybe there won't. Like I've said many times, justice is served many different ways. We're going to take a break and we'll be back here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. I thought I'd sit down and take it to the light side a little bit. Quite often on this program, we focus on cases that are to some disturbing, to some sad. They're real life, what we like to call here Main Street Media. We don't cushion things. We talk about disappearances and murder and rape and cold cases and things like that. But every so often we turn to technology, like what Robin was talking about, where we turn to entertainment and talk to somebody in television or movies or whatever, I thought I'd sit down with Brent Butt. And for some of you in Canada, you're going to know who Brent Butt is, star of the very famous television program Corner Gas, which was on CTV for six seasons, and is still very popular in syndication and reruns. And then, of course, his most recent network program, Hiccups, again on CTV. He's got a new movie out now called No Clue. And but he still has time. He's a guy from Tisdale, Saskatchewan, to come back to his roots, to come back to Saskatchewan and small-town Canada and do what he loves best, which is stand-up comedy. Now, I happen to be sitting down watching. Remember the old Dean Martin roasts where Dean would have roast a celebrity? And I was happened to be watching the Johnny Carson celebrity roast the other day, and just laugh my fanny off listening to the comedians of the 1970s. Yeah, George Burns was there, and Jack Benny, and Rich Little, and Dom DeLuise, and Dean Martin. The whole bit, you know who they are. There's a new book out about Johnny Carson that from his lawyer that got me thinking about comedy. So I heard that Brent Butt was going to be doing a stand-up show here in my hometown, and it's not often that we get TV stars, movie stars coming to small town Canada to do their thing, but Brent still likes to do that. So I sat down with Brent today and talked about comedy, television, and what it's like to come back to his roots. All right, my next guest is part of the Weyburn Concert Series. He'll be at the Weyburn Comprehensive Cafetorium Tuesday, October 15th at 7:30 p.m. If you haven't heard of Brent Butt, then you've been living under a rock somewhere. He's the star of Corner Gas, Hiccups, and has a new movie coming out called No Clue. Brent, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Nice to have you. Happy Thanksgiving, by the way. What's the deal? How come we have Thanksgiving now and the Americans have it later? Is that a global warming thing or what?
I don't know. They got to always try to be different. That's the thing. They always want their own thing. Now they got to do 10-pin bowling. What's going to be next?
Exactly. Listen, No Clue. Before we get into your stand-up, I want to talk about that a little bit. I have no clue about No Clue. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's my first foray into the movie business. It's a movie that I wrote. I wrote it about 4 years ago, and it these things always take time to come together. But we finished the post production on it. It's going to be coming out sometime in the new year. We don't have a release date yet. We think spring of the new year, and it's a comedic murder mystery. I'm a fan of the genre, the detective movie, the whodunit.
Right.
This is. It's an homage to that, but it's also comedic. But my goal in making the movie was I didn't want to make a zany, wacky comedy. I wanted to make a really, truly dark, gritty murder mystery that just kind of happened to be funny because the main character is kind of in over his head, and that's what this is.
That sounds great. Brent Butt is here. He'll be in Weyburn on October 15th at 7:30 p.m. at the Weyburn Cafetorium at the Comp School. Stand-up routine, is that your roots? I'm not talking about the old miniseries from the 70s. I'm talking about your roots as a comedian. You're busy making movies, TV shows. I'd love to have your air mile points. And yet you still have time to come back to Saskatchewan and around Canada to do stand-up. How come?
Stand-up is just something I'll never turn my back on. It's where I'm happiest. When I'm on stage doing stand-up comedy in a club or a theater somewhere up in front of people, I've always said if you boil everything else away, like I do a lot of things, but if you boil all that away, what you're left with is a guy who likes to try to be funny in front of people. And so, you know, I always consider myself to be a stand-up comic who does other things. But at the end of the day, I'm a comic.
Well, you're from Tisdale, Saskatchewan, and, you know, here in Weyburn. We seem to be naturally funny here in Canada because we're nice guys. What about that and comedic timing? Can anyone just get up on stage, or how hard is it?
Well, no, I mean, it's like anything where there's some level of skill involved, you know. Not anybody can just, you know, hop out and play in the NHL. Not anybody can just throw on a pair of skates and play in the NHL. Not anybody can just grab some gear and decide to weld a giant sculpture together. So you have to have some natural inclination towards that, some proclivity towards that, and then it comes down to pursuing it and actually doing it, working at it, and doing what it takes to get better and better. But you have to have some natural skill for it.
Without giving away your...
I've tried knitting. I don't have any ability to knit.
Yeah. Have you tried knitting on stage, though?
No. I figure if I'm this bad at it, just being alone in my room, you know.
Oh, I see. Okay. What about your, without giving away the show, what is it about? Your life, growing up in Tisdale, lots of funny stuff, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be on stage for over an hour, so there's no real kind of, there's never a theme to my show. I don't think you're ever going to learn anything. I don't profess to go out there and you're going to walk away having really learned something. There's none of that. It's really, I'm going to go out and talk about what I think is funny. It's hard for me to say, here's what I'm going to talk about, because I don't really plan that far ahead for any stand-up show. And that's one of the things that makes stand-up comedy magic to me and makes it fun to me, is that it's that unknown element. Like every time I get up in front of a new group of, when hundreds of individuals get together, they create a unique entity, one single unique entity, just because of all the different energies and all the different points of view and all the different, so you end up with, you're talking to one big entity that is like no other entity you've ever encountered before. It's completely unique, and you don't know what they're going to like, what they're going to not like. And so aside from, I'll decide how I'm going to open the show, but then the rest of it is kind of determined. What alleys I go down is determined by the responses I get from the people.
Brent Butts is here. What about comedy today compared to comedy when you first got started? Just watching the Comedy Network and seeing some of the stuff that's out there compared to what you did when you first started. Is there a comparison?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can always compare. I don't know what that comparison would be. I know that right now I'm very impressed with the crop of young comics that I see coming up on the horizon. When I travel around the country and, when I pop in the comedy clubs around, and you see that next generation of comics that are like in their early to mid-20s that have been doing it for a year or two, I think we're in good hands. I really think this is one of the strongest crops of new comics coming up that I've seen in a long time. People who are doing it for the right reasons. Like when I started stand-up comedy, I know for myself, I decided to do stand-up when I was 12, and I was going to do stand-up no matter what. But I was fortunate that I came along at a time when there was a comedy boom going on, and anybody who even claimed to be humorous could start getting some bookings. And there was a real glut of people who, frankly, weren't very funny. And when that comedy boom when that bubble burst and started to dry up, a lot of those guys scattered and went back to whatever their day job was. And the people who were left behind were the people who were going to do it no matter what, people like myself. Well, we're long since, there hasn't been a comedy boom. We're definitely not in any kind of comedy boom territory. And so what I'm seeing is this next crop of comics that are coming up are guys and gals who would be doing this no matter what. They're stand-up comics. They're not doing it for the money, they're not doing it for the fame, although they would like those things. They're doing it because they like crafting and performing jokes.
I was reading a book about Johnny Carson here the other day, and it talks about how he was shy. Yet when he was able to go out on stage, usually in front of just a small group, not necessarily a big group, he was funny. What about Brent Butt? Is Brent Butt a shy guy, or have you always been a funny guy?
Well, I think I've always been kind of a funny guy. I was, usually the guy goofing around in class and stuff. But it's not an uncommon story for comics to be... I'm trying to remember, there's a quote, I can't remember who said it. They asked some comic in an interview if he was the class clown, and he said, no, but I wrote for the class clown. So, you get a lot of that, but those people who are driven to get up on stage despite being shy, I'm very impressed by. You know, their drive and commitment, is such that it usurps their fear of getting up in front of people. They have to do it anyway.
What about the classics? You know, I brought up Johnny Carson. A lot of the others were starting to, this damn circle of life thing is out there. We're starting to lose them, although their comedy is always here. Will there ever be another so-and-so that can come forward and take over, or the new blood is just different from what you and I grew up with?
Yeah, I think it's more of that. I think it's more a case of, they're just different, and people's tastes can change a little bit. But for me, I didn't grow up watching Carson, partly because I grew up in a small town with two stations,
right.
He wasn't on CKBI or CFQC, so I didn't grow up watching him. In the 80s, 1980 I believe it was, when cable first came to Tisdale, and my friend Garth McLeod, they got cable at his place, and that was the first time seeing Letterman. And Letterman, to me, was amazing. He was this amazing new comedy mind. But I remember there being the generation ahead of me saying, well, he's no Carson. Because to them, Carson was it. But so to me, now, here I am, 47. I've been doing stand-up 25 years. Letterman is in his 60s. He'll be retiring sometime soon. There's that fresh, young, hot genre is now the old guard, right?
Right.
You have guys like Jimmy Kimmel coming up, who is fantastic at what he does. He's the new guy for a generation of, a new young generation of kids. But he also idolizes Letterman. So there, all these influences will always, it's like a river flowing down. It'll always flow. Everybody was influenced by everybody, and that'll keep going on. To some degree, some young kid getting up on amateur night, tonight at a club somewhere, 18 years old, doing stand-up for the first time, has been influenced by Buster Keaton in some regard.
Yeah, for sure. Brent Butt is here. He'll be in Weyburn Tuesday the 15th, tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. at the cafetorium at the Weyburn Comp. Last question. Canadian television. And it's... we have the Parliament coming forward now talking about pick your channel and go with it. Is there too much Canadian choice right now? Would you like to go back to the, not necessarily the old two-channel days like you and I grew up with, but is there too much out there right now, and how do we protect what we have in our country?
Is there too much? I don't think there can ever be too much choice. I think, that's a good problem to have. I think it just puts the onus on us to create product that can compete with anything else that's out there, and I believe we have the ability to do that. And I think, I think the thing that we have to do better, we have to learn how to do better, is how to promote and market. The U.S. machine has that down pat. I mean, they know what they're doing when it comes to market. They can make something horrible look fantastic, and we kind of have the ability to make something fantastic look like it's going to be completely boring and dull. And so we have to learn to be better at that, I think, marketing and the selling side of it. But I think the product that is being manufactured here is of world-class quality. It's just nobody gets incentivized to go out and see it.
Right on. Brent, thank you. I appreciate it, and welcome to Weyburn.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's comedian Brent Butt, television actor, movie actor, and a funny guy. And he'll be here in Saskatchewan doing a stand-up comedic routine. And I thought we'd, divert a little bit from what we do normally on the show here and talk about comedy, something a little bit lighter instead of some of the sad stories that we share with you. My name's Dan Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. And we are right back. Hopefully you enjoyed the show tonight. Again, I apologize for the telephone issues with Pat Brown, but we did get those straightened out. Don't forget, our webpage is scaredmonkeysradio.com. Of course, the blog site is scaredmonkeys.com. Thank you, and we'll see you again real soon.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.